Well, one or two people have said we don't talk about the National Football League often enough. I'm blaming the producer entirely for those decisions, but we're going to do that today. We're going to solve that problem today. One of our favorites.
Well, the NFL's not going away, Bob. I mean, it's going to be here every week.
Thank you for the update. I was a little concerned, John, that maybe the league was in peril. Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News is
only the Raiders.
Has been with us before, and he'll be with us again in just a couple minutes. Stick around. The Bomb Account podcast begins after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and it's been a while, John, since we chatted about the National Football League. Time to do that again.
Well, we brought in our expert.
Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News is with us. Good to see you. How's everything? Okay.
Bob and John, doing very well. It finally feels like football weather out here, you know?
Yeah, you're in that football hotbed of New York where the Jets and the Giants, I mean, I got to tell you, I did grow up a Giants fan as a kid, long before they were successful. And then the Jets, I mean, I don't know how you can continue to be a football fan in the tri-state area and enjoy it. I mean, we are talking, this is absolute, utter torture for both franchises.
Definitely. And the Giants, as pathetic as they've been in recent years, the Jets are basically the only organization that makes them look competent every day. You know, they're declaring Joe Flacco their starter a week after they declare Mike White basically the future of their franchise, even though they have the number two overall pick in their building. It's just every year. Daniel Jones had a good comment this week too, the discussion about the Tampa Bay game coming up next Monday night. And Daniel Jones has an 0-7 record in primetime games in his career. He's never won one. And somebody pointed that out and said, you know, do you prepare differently for those than other games? And Jones said, well, it's no different than any other game around here. We haven't won basically at any time of day enough as a Giant. And I thought that was really telling just of, you know, now how self-aware the Giants are of where they are.
Reminds me of the old quote, and I think it was a manager of a baseball team said, we can't win at home, we can't win on the road, and we don't have any other options.
So that's exactly the case.
Or comparable to the Harry Neal's favorite line is, they just finished O Canada, and he turned to his assistant coach and said, every time I hear that song, we play badly.
So as a New Yorker and a guy who spends probably an inordinate amount of time looking at the Jets and the Giants, where does the blame lie? And does it lie in the same place with both franchises? Are these decisions by management? Is ownership held to the fire? What's the sense there?
No, that's a great question. Yes. And it's a good point that they are two different franchises with two different kinds of problems and histories. And I would start with the Giants, where obviously the Mara family is the same ownership that presided over the two, well, now I guess you could still call them recent championships compared to the Jets timeline of the last time they won. But, you know, John Mara was overseeing that whole process when Eli Manning and those great defenses lead them to those two titles. But the Giants ownership also, starting with trying to hang on to Eli Manning at the end of his career, really started the process in motion of not knowing when to say goodbye and making the incorrect roster decisions to accompany that. So instead of rebuilding for the future and pulling the plug on the now, not self-evaluating properly from the top on down in the Giants organization led them to make certain draft picks and trades and free agent signings, Saquon Barkley being the number two overall pick, signing guys like Nate Solder, Alec Ogletree, and hitting and missing on big money guys who could help you win now. When you misevaluate, as you guys know, if you misevaluate your ability to win at a certain time and you go all in and you miss, it only sets your timeline further back. And so the Giants are still picking up the pieces from 2017, 2018 of misevaluating their own roster. I think the head coach who's in now, Joe Judge, bringing in some of the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban philosophies of roster construction, has them on the right track of recognizing it's not just going to happen overnight. But of course, a year into his tenure, what do? They go all in and spend a ton of money on Kenny Golladay, Adoree Jackson, all these free agents to help them win now. And now coming out of a bye weekend, they are 3-6 and still struggling. So did they misevaluate themselves again? And have they set themselves further back once more? But you look at the New York Jets, frankly, it's just mismanagement constantly. I mean, you look at every year, the decisions they make, you know, I feel bad for Jets fans, honestly. And Giants fans, they've been going through the ringer too. But Jets fans, they get sold such false hope so frequently by a team that it almost looks like the Jets aren't necessarily even playing the same game as some of these other teams they're facing. I mean, they've given up 45 or more points in three out of the last four games. The last time that happened was the 1966 Giants. And their head coach, Robert Saleh, came in as a defensive mind from the 49ers where, yes, maybe your young rookie quarterback is going to struggle, but at least you want a semblance of competence on the defensive side of the ball. I look at them and I see a coach who is trying to get his players to fit his scheme and not making his scheme fit his players. If you just tell the other team's quarterback, we're running man-to-man on the outside all game, beat us, that's a great philosophy if you have great corners.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're going to get shredded up and down the field, and to not adjust week to week is horrible. Joe Douglas, their GM, I think is a more shrewd mind than they've had there in a while. But then he goes out and gives up a draft pick for Joe Flacco. And you have to question, I think when you see, you guys know this too, and this isn't just in football, but when you see a general manager who you think is pretty strong manager and understanding of assets, give up a draft pick for a player like that midseason, what that tells you, what that tells me usually, not only is that a type of a panic move, it also means that the people above him are telling him what they want to see. They're telling him, this isn't good enough. We need to scrape a few wins out of this because, John, you hit on this in the question. The biggest concern for the Jets and Giants is, will the fans keep coming to the games? Mm-hmm. And the Jets and the Giants in recent years, that has not been the case in the second half of the season. The Jets already are completely irrelevant. The Giants are teetering. If the Giants don't win a couple games coming out of this bye, that's how changes happen in their organization, is when fans stop showing up. And I can tell you on social media, Giants fans have been trying to organize essentially walkouts of some of these games. But of course, the Giants finally have won 2 of 3, and they went toe-to-toe with the Kansas City Chiefs on the road. So there's a glimmer of hope there.
Yeah.
But certainly John Mara and the Giants, the way that change happens with them is if you guys look at MetLife Stadium in December and all you see is those gray seats.
What I'm intrigued by are cities where there are multiple franchises in the same sport. So New York, of course, Mets, Yankees fans are different. Jets, Giants fans are different. White Sox, Cubs fans in Chicago. Angels, Dodgers fans in, you know, suburban New York, although the Angels aren't exactly in LA, they're in Anaheim. But I'm intrigued by, you know, as somebody who's been in that market, how much crossover actually is there? If you're a Jets fan and the season is going to hell in a handbasket, do you start looking at the Giants and start rooting for them? Or is that line definable and cannot be crossed at any time?
Cannot be crossed at any time, Bob. And this is a good question, but frankly, you see more like if someone's fed up with the Jets or the Giants, instead of crossing over, you know, they'll defect to, you know, the Cowboys or the Packers, or frankly, nowadays, because it's gotten so big, if your team stinks by October, November, everybody just immerses themselves in the NFL draft and the draft talk. And, oh, who are we going to get? But that's what I talk about false promise, Bob, that, you know, the Jets and these teams, they can sell you on, well, we have a high draft pick next year, so just wait till what we do with that. But like, look at the Giants, for example, that, you know, we talk about how important draft picks are. They haven't hit on a third round pick in years. And that's a premium asset that good teams have to hit on. And if you're a Giants fan who says, well, this season's over, we have to look to the future, you have to also contextualize if your hope is really even worth investing. But that is what ends up happening, is that people turn more towards the draft. The problem with that is, unless you're a team whose strategy and philosophy involves building through the draft, and it's defined and you can see where it's headed, then every draft might not be an opportunity for you to build. It might actually just be another opportunity for you on a national stage to demonstrate to the rest of the league why you are so much less efficient as an organization, which really in recent years has been what it's been for the Jets and Giants.
Just as a complete aside, if you're a Jets fan, can you be a Yankees fan, or do you have to be a Mets fan?
That happens, but it's the typical breakdown is Jets Mets.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do see the odd crossover. I was talking to a guy just today, actually, who told me he's a Jets Mets and Knicks fan. And I was expecting him to end, you know, with the rhyming Nets, because that's typically what you hear. Right. But, you know, him dropping Knicks on me kind of threw me for a loop.
Yeah.
What's the genesis of that? Is it simply, you know, Mets were an expansion baseball team, Jets came from the AFL.
At the same stadium for a long time, Bob.
Yeah. Is that the history? Is that how that works?
Yeah. I think, right. The longer standing, you know, Giants and Yankees, and Giants having played at Yankee Stadium back in the day and all of that, it's just the more traditional breakdown. So the people who wanted to buck the trend and who decided, I guess, probably, I'm from Philadelphia, and growing up in Philadelphia. Yeah. I don't share that too often in the local market, as you can imagine, but you know, if you grow up in Philadelphia, you think New York fans are arrogant and New York fans think Philadelphia fans are hooligans. And so if you were a New York fan who also thought that a Yankees or Giants fan was arrogant, then, you know, the Jets and the Mets coming around and showing some promise early in their careers, an easy chance to jump ship.
Okay, we solved the problems of the Jets and the Giants. I want to get back to some old news, and that is, why did Aaron Rodgers get off scot-free?
Oh, great question. Well, because, John, frankly, the NFL picks and chooses, frankly, in an arbitrary way, when they are going to make an example of somebody. And I think it's no more complicated than that. It's not fair. They don't hold everybody to the same standard, but that's what happened there. I also think, look what happened when Aaron Rodgers came back to the Packers. He comes back, he plays a game, they beat the Seahawks, whatever. After that game, he doesn't do an in-person interview. Now, because he's unvaccinated, and being unvaccinated means you have to wear a mask, and now everybody knows, he won't do an in-person interview. He does a Zoom interview. Mm-hmm. And you know who enables that? The Green Bay Packers, the team that also got fined and got fined much a larger amount of money for breaking protocols and not reporting things to the league than Rodgers did. So I look at it as a big name who's being enabled by an organization that has employees that are afraid to stand up to him. And I think that the NFL does a lot of things, not everything, but sometimes they make decisions like this with optics as too strong of a guiding force. Now, I thought it was a very easy opportunity for them to bring down the hammer on somebody who misled the league, who misled the public, who misled people in his own building. But frankly, I think the NFL wanted this to go away. I think they wanted the news cycle to move on. I can tell you that people in the league office were furious, not just with, you know, what the media was angry with, like him being misled or him misleading everybody, but that if I just told you the stories of league employees who stayed up all night to make sure that a testing facility got the test, you know, if a truck broke down, or that they made sure that a team was open the next day. And how do we make sure that the Giants facility is open if there was a hiccup in test results? And so there have been people that you're never going to even hear their names working morning, noon, and night on this. So that's what I was disappointed most with the league in not coming down hard on Rodgers was, I know that people in their own office were furious because they just know how all of each other has worked so hard just to complete last season and then get this season off the ground.
I'm just shocked that the member clubs didn't voice more opinion. You know what I mean? If you're in the NFC North, even the Detroit Lions should be saying something. Even the Bears should be saying something, that, and the Vikings saying, hold on, why is he getting treated differently than the rest of us in this division?
There's definitely some of that happening behind the scenes. There are teams calling the league, voicing those types of concerns. And that's actually more standard operating procedure than you would expect for a lot of different things, officiating, whatever. But just like with bad officiating, which is another huge topic right now, there, if you talk to coaches or GMs or executives in the league, even if they have those types of frustrations, and even if they have voiced them to the league, they'll tell you that, listen, I said something, but I don't expect to either hear back, or I don't expect anything to happen, because they frankly think it's par for the course that there would be inconsistency when it comes to policy enforcement.
What do you think happens to the legacy of this guy long-term? You know, here's a guy who has indicated an interest in leaving Green Bay, would be highly sought after if he does, and is absolutely a Hall of Fame player. But legacy means something. Likeability means something. And mistakes, at least on the part of, when fans look at things, are not easily and quickly forgotten. How much does this hurt him in terms of his legacy?
I think it damages his legacy significantly. And I also think, as we saw, I think Rodgers, there's almost nothing he cares about more than how he is perceived and how he is remembered. And that's certainly how he comes off. And I feel like he just says that out loud now. And obviously we have seen that if you win, if you come back and you win, of course, there'll be a whole Packers fan base. Anyone who's been a fan of him individually as a player is going to start to try to forget about this and make other people forget about it. But I think league-wide, you know, this is something that players, executives, media, and fans, there is a significant portion of all of those groups who look at this and will never forget how, not that he can lie about something, but that he could lie about something this big and be this selfish. And I think really it confirmed, right, a lot of, when he had detractors prior to this, his detractors, something they would typically mention was his selfishness as a player, as a person, as somebody who was willing to throw his whole organization under the bus if he didn't get his way. One thing I find interesting, though, I thought about this a lot when Rodgers got caught red-handed here, was Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl last year. On the field after the game, he is the only person from the Bucs organization without a mask on. Every coach, every trainer, every player, people from the NFL. Tom's not wearing one. If you watch throughout last season during the pandemic, when these stadiums, most of them were empty, he regularly did not wear a mask when he came out onto the field after the game to shake the other quarterback's hand. That was something that was mandated by the league. I felt personally, someone who watches very closely, that he was flaunting some of the NFL's protocols and rules that he thought, were ridiculous. I did not see Tom Brady take a hit for that. As far as his legacy, as far as how people perceive him, I don't know why that is. I don't know if the fact that he was winning and won, and that his story is such a great story that people just kind of brushed it to the side and didn't want to talk about it. But I just find it interesting that you have Brady on the one hand clearly flaunting the protocols, and on the other hand, Aaron Rodgers doing it in a different way. And I think because Rodgers's kind of breach of trust was so overt, that he is going to pay a greater price at this moment than Brady will. But I do view them as similarly perceived selfish acts. So I do wonder if does Rodgers end up being understood more or let off a little bit more because Brady was too. But it does look like people are offended by how in your face his lie was.
But this is something the National Football League has been accused of many times in the past, is favoritism, favorite treatment to star athletes. Punishments have reflected that.
How do you argue with it, though, Bob? I mean, here at the most successful professional sports league in North America, because of the rules and regulations they put in to protect those superstars.
Well, and I think all leagues to some extent do this kind of thing. And it appalls me. It isn't fair. but I guess I understand it, or I've come to understand doing it. But the National Football League is as guilty as any league, and maybe more guilty of this, of preferential treatment. You know, it's clearly who you are and what your image is, as that reflects how the National Football League deals with you. Agreed or not, Pat?
Yes, I think that's the perception, and that's what how a lot of people feel. Here's a good example. So the league just announced today, I got a copy of a memo they sent to teams, and they are enhancing their protocols around the Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S. So they are going to require players, vaccinated or not, to wear masks for a full week after the holiday. They're strongly encouraging teams to test family members and friends who come into town to have Thanksgiving dinner with players at the facilities. All these mitigation measures in place because they see a rise in COVID infections throughout the United States and also in the league. And there are players looking at that and saying, well, wait, I only got vaccinated because you told me I didn't have to follow the protocols that the unvaccinated guys would have followed. Now you're telling me I have to follow them this November. And so it's just another example of, now listen, I'm all for masking, vaccinations, all of that. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying that at any moment, their decision on what is called for from their point of view can change based on nothing more than what they feel like implementing at that time. And I think that people look at Aaron Rodgers getting away with lying about being vaccinated and breaking all of those protocols, and then the NFL not coming down hard on him, and then the week later announcing enhanced protocols for the guys who have been staying in line the whole time. And so these are certainly topics. The ones you are raising are certainly topics discussed in these locker rooms and in the hallways of these facilities every day right now.
Pat, have you heard any contemplation or preparation for postponed games? We've seen it in the NHL return this week. Would the NFL have any type of system in place, considering that we do see COVID cases going up?
They actually threatened at the beginning of the season when more players than they wanted were on the fence about the vaccine. The NFL and the NFL Players Association, for the first time, really threatened not just the cancellation or postpone, not just the cancellation of games, but the idea that we will not be paying you if you are unvaccinated and you lead to an outbreak that prompts the cancellation of a game. And so that announcement actually spurred, even though there were a lot of players upset with the union for agreeing to that without really consulting all the player membership, but what that resulted in was a lot of players getting vaccinated, because that's what affects these guys' decisions the most, more often than not, is did you hit their wallet? Are you going to hit their money? So I know this week we're seeing some positives from the Chargers. There have been positives with the Steelers. So I know the league is monitoring that. Certainly the mitigation measures that I just told you about that were announced this week are in response to increased numbers they're seeing, and they do not, under any circumstance, want to have to postpone games the way they did in the 2020 season. So, you know, in that sense, definitely kudos to the NFL for reacting to what they see, to the science that they see. And that's the hope, is that they don't run into that situation. But, you know, people like Aaron Rodgers don't help the cause. And that's certainly agreeing with your point earlier, especially with him essentially saying that the NFL protocols are made up just for the public's consumption. Certainly hard to hear. There is a reason behind what they do, but there also are legitimate reasons to question why and when they're doing them.
I'd be intrigued to know what Rodgers' teammates in Green Bay feel about him. You know, I think you would have had some questions. If I was a Packer and I was a teammate of Rodgers and I saw what went on during the offseason and all the gobbledygook, that would have pissed me off a little bit, maybe more than a little bit. And now this COVID thing, and you look around, you go, whoa, what the bleep? You know, I mean, this guy's supposed to be, I'm the guy protecting him or working with him or whatever. And yet it's mitigated by their record. I mean, they're playing well.
Right, right. Well, that's it. I mean, if you're a quarterback and you can be 8-2 and following your own set of rules, your teammates aren't going to question you. They're not going to say a word, you know, and the players like winning too. And they know they've got a better chance of winning with Aaron Rodgers under the center than anybody else.
And you brought up a good point too, about just the quarterbacks being treated differently. I mean, Rodgers in Green Bay, they're not the same exact scenarios, but like Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, he has so much authority in that organization and so much pull and has all the people up top in his corner. I mean, he can't play anymore, but he runs the show there. They genuflect to him because of what he's done for them in the past. And now, of course, he's on the flip side of this COVID conversation because he tests positive and then self-reports it. So obviously that's responsible of him, but that's what you should do. But just, I'm just bringing up the idea that in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is the Green Bay Packers right now in a large sense. And so one thing you do have to remember too about these locker rooms is there are certainly guys who are ticked off, you have to imagine. But there's such a large portion of these locker rooms are two groups of players who just won't raise a stink about anything. Uh-huh. Young guys who don't have a voice yet and are still trying to make their way in the NFL and get their big second contract, or mercenaries, right? 1-year contract free agents who all they want is to play well and win so they can get another deal. And so those two groups of players are shush no matter what is going on, because they're just trying to build something for themselves. They want the team to succeed. I'm not saying they're selfish, but it's just, there's a select group of veterans who would have the wherewithal and the ability to stand up even to a guy like Aaron Rodgers and say something.
By the way, did you see the Steelers without Ben Roethlisberger on Sunday? So if I'm ownership, I'm making sure Ben's back on the back as soon as possible, because Mason Rudolph ain't the answer. And I mean, let's face it, when you go to and get a 22-22 tie with the Detroit Lions, you ain't very good.
Tell you what, they're a tough watch with him and without him. But you're right, they're probably a tougher watch without him.
Well, we want to take a break here, but I would say this. Rodgers better be happy that they have the record that they have, because if they start losing football games, those teammates around him are going to look at the situation a lot differently. Not many teammates, I don't know any, in fact, that have been overtly vocal, but that'll change if they start to lose. That's my bet. With Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News, we'll come back. We'll talk about the Cowboys and the Chiefs, the moves the Rams have made, and the Colts, who may be better than anybody suspected. We'll talk about all that when we continue after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon. Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News is with us. The Rams go and get Von Miller. Then they go get OBJ. And then they go out and get crushed by San Francisco. Sure. This is an organization that thinks they can win, and there's reason to believe they can. And when I say win, I mean a Super Bowl. And they would have nothing better than to repeat what Tampa Bay did, which is win the Super Bowl at home. But have they done too much? Have they tweaked it too much? We know Miller is still a very good player and an effective one. I'm not as sure about OBJ. I'm not quite as sure whether Beckham is what he was when he was in New York. What are your thoughts on that?
My first thought is, when I watched that San Francisco game, my thought coming away from that is Sean McVay, the head coach, and Matthew Stafford, the quarterback, looked off. I thought McVay coached a bad game, but he got away from the run. I thought his game management was poor. And Matt Stafford, you mentioned the two most recent acquisitions, but the one that was supposed to change this team the most dramatically was Stafford in the offseason. And it was doing that. But we saw him now.
He had a terrible day.
A couple primetime games. The other one, I think, was against the Titans, where with the spotlight on him, he has shrunk from it dramatically. And forgetting their recent acquisitions just for a second, if he doesn't improve, nothing else will matter. I think their interior offensive line has shown that it has some warts. And the one other thing I would add before I get to Miller and Odell is losing Robert Woods, their wide receiver, is a major deal because of the run pass action they like to get to, where he is a very strong run blocker, also is very good yards after catch, run after catch, complements Cooper Kupp well. Stafford coming in as a first-year QB now had at least had some chemistry with him and Kupp. So losing him is a major deal. I think that the Rams have to hope that this game was a one-off of not even about Von Miller and Odell not working out right away. I think I viewed it as Stafford and McVay being shell-shocked by losing Woods and being out-coached. But to your point about have they done enough or have they done too much, I think that the Von Miller acquisition is something that we should judge a month from now and not now. Because what you got him for is not to win now. It's to win the game that gets you the first seed in the NFC and home field advantage. It's to make the play at the end of the fourth quarter in the NFC championship game, the strip sack, you know, like he did against Cam Newton in the Super Bowl for Denver years ago. You know, he's a luxury piece, no doubt about it. I don't think that he's the guy who you just counted on. He's had an ankle injury to win now. I'd rather not see him on his back against George Kittle in the run game. But certainly I view him as a luxury piece. Now, Odell is interesting because you go out and get him. Let me tell you this, first of all, they would not have gone out and gotten Odell for the price he would have cost in a trade when he was still on the Browns.
Fair enough.
The only reason they got him is because he got released and came on the cheap. So that was the only reason they get him. It may be a blessing in disguise that that happened now that they lost Woods, but I wonder about how quickly can Sean McVay, now they do have a bye week to get ready for this, how quickly can he make him not only incorporate him more regularly into the offense? I think he only had like 15 snaps in that Niners game, but make him a focal point. Because now losing Woods and really not having as strong a running game as you were supposed to have, you're looking at, well, we have a player who can take it to the house anytime he has the ball in his hands. At least that's what he used to be able to do. So we need to get him the ball a lot, but he just got here. So how much can we install? And I think that with the 17-game season, there's a little bit more time for the Rams to put it all together. I love how Les Snead has gone all in these several years. I love their attitude. I love their aggressiveness. What I love most about it is, Bob, is that they've stayed good. Like, you know, teams like the Giants and some of the bottom feeders, when they go all in on a season and they miss, you know, they trade draft picks for players, they sign big ticket free agents.
And then they're screwed for years.
They plummet.
Yeah.
And the Rams have been able to sustain a certain level here for several years now, which I admire. But I think you make an excellent point is if this doesn't work out and the bottom falls out, this could be an absolute catastrophe. And, you know, some of the teams we're probably going to talk about too, the one we already talked about, the Green Bay Packers, you know, Dallas Cowboys, the NFC is strong. And so I think you're looking at the Rams understanding. Now we talked about the Giants as a team that doesn't recognize who they are. The Rams know that they're good and that they need something to get over the hump. Now, did they overreact to that and overspend? Maybe. But I'm fascinated by them. I think they're one of the most interesting teams to follow day in and day out right now in the league.
But you know Beckham. You've been enough practices with Beckham when he was a Giant. What's in his DNA that makes this happen more than once? What is it in his character that makes him bounce? I mean, he should have never. I mean, if I'm the Giants, you got to find a way to keep him. If I'm the Browns, obviously there was a chemistry issue there. What's wrong with Odell Beckham Jr.?
So with the Giants, he made the mistake of publicly blasting Eli Manning. And even though I knew it and some of his teammates knew that, you know, and some of his other teammates felt the same way, that it was time to move on, saying it out loud in that ESPN interview essentially ended his relationship with the Giants. That was it. And Dave Gettleman acted accordingly and vindictively traded him to Cleveland when there were other suitors available to the Giants. But in Cleveland, it was a little bit different, John. In Cleveland, now, So I can't defend the way that Odell essentially burnt that final bridge in New York. I would defend his time in Cleveland as a different situation in this way. Baker Mayfield, the Browns quarterback, has an ego. Like Odell has one too. That's no question about it. But Baker has an ego. He's the guy there and the Browns treat him like it. And there was a definite disconnect and from the quarterback side of looking off Beckham when he was wide open, throwing to somebody
over and over again.
And let me tell you this too, and not to pound my chest, but if you look back to late this summer, early this fall, when they start playing more games, Beckham comes back healthy. I was writing on Sundays sometimes about that there were chirps and chatter coming out of Cleveland that Mayfield was not taking to a healthy Beckham back on the field and that it had nothing to do with the wide receiver's lack of buy-in. And frankly, John and Bob, Odell in New York was a young guy who sometimes could not get out of his own way. In Cleveland, he was determined to put his head down and drive through. And he was determined to put his head down, drive through, and prove everybody not only wrong that he was a distraction, but also to prove everyone after this torn ACL that I'm not injury prone and I'm not a head case who's going to ruin a team. And I'm willing to be a compliment to Jarvis Landry and to Nick Chubb and to Baker Mayfield. I can tell you this, no question about it. In Cleveland, he tried to fit in and the quarterback did not accept him as a fitting piece to that.
I agree 100%. And Shannon is laughing there because he knows I'm a Buckeye and I'm a Browns fan. You know, we've gone through about 350 quarterbacks over the last 20 years. And that's almost not an exaggeration. And I don't think this guy's the guy. I think he's good, but I don't think he's great.
For the record, Pat, we had an argument when it was Cincinnati versus Cleveland. Would you rather have Joe Burrow or Baker Mayfield? And up until the last drive of the game, I think Bob was taking Joe Burrow.
Well, the truth is we had that discussion after the Browns whipped Cincinnati, and I was asked about it, and I said before the game I'd have taken Burrow.
Yeah,
that's after the game, I wasn't so sure. Now I'm sure again.
I'm still taking Burrow.
Yeah, now I'm sure again after Mayfield's performance for, the last 56 minutes of their game last week.
Another quarterback that is enabled by the organization. And if you notice, 100%. Not to get into the weeds on it, but the way Odell's time in Cleveland ended, I promise you, you'll hear more about it at some point.
Well, I don't know whether you saw it, Pat, but I saw somebody put together a video showing, high camera footage of Odell Beckham being wide open, Mayfield looking at him, and then throwing somewhere else, and it was done repeatedly, and it seemed clear to me he had no intention of giving OBJ any kind of opportunity to show his stuff.
Yeah. Yes, and from Cleveland's organizational side, the narrative became Odell does not want to be a part of the Browns anymore. That's not what happened. What happened was the public finally was made aware that the Browns were not making him a part of them. And then the Browns, the organization, after failing to execute a trade to the Saints prior to the deadline that was nearly across the finish line, then decided to make Odell an example out of him by, telling him not to report to the facility, releasing all these statements. So anyway, I could talk about that one for a while.
Yeah.
Well. No, all those ex-Giants. I know you'd love to.
Well, I don't know. I would say this. Odell was such a captivating figure when he was in New York. And frankly, in hindsight, after covering him and then now covering him from afar, he is a very special guy and athlete, and also a much more cerebral person and much less selfish person than you would imagine from the outside. But of course, some of that is due to his own doing of things that he did when he was younger. But I root for him. You know, I've covered a lot of guys in New York and other places.
I've covered
plenty of guys who you'd say, or maybe I just wouldn't say anything at all, but that they're out for themselves, or, you know, his teammates didn't like him, but I wouldn't say any of those things about Odell. And that's an honest truth.
I want to get to a couple of other games that are coming up this weekend before we get out of here. I mentioned the Colts 5-2 since week 4. Their only losses to the Ravens and the Titans, and both of them were, you know, very close games. This is quite surprising to me, but I'm starting to wonder whether this team is actually for real. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm interested in you bringing up an AFC South team and not the Titans, and I like it. I think that. So let me start with the first point. Carson Wentz scares me to death. The way he manages, like, you look, I don't know what his exact interception number is. Is it 2 or something? But he makes so many dangerous plays compared to even what his stats show.
Oh, I know.
That he scares me. Here's the reason they're competitive. Their offensive line is awesome. Mm-hmm. And they've been banged up last year. I think Nelson was out for a time last year, their guard out of Notre Dame. Their O-line and Jonathan Taylor in that running game, if you win and you pound people at the line of scrimmage and you out-physical them, especially when the weather gets cold, you're going to be in games. And I think what I like about them is that they stay in games. And they're deep, you know.
Week after week, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, their defense leaves a lot to be desired, I think. You know, Darius Leonard's an awesome player. Kwity Paye, the rookie, I like what I've seen out of him. They've tried to build up the pass rush a little bit. I know I think them almost coughing that one up to the Jags was scary. And I think they're living on the edge a little bit, Bob, but I agree with your point that, especially because now the talk in the NFL right now is, okay, we know who's 8-2, 7-3, but you're bringing up the point of in the middle of the pack, these teams that are 5-4, 6-3, 4-5, whatever, who's going to emerge and jump out? And I think teams like the Colts, who have strong lines, who can win the line of scrimmage really against, if not all, then most teams in the league, they're just going to be in it at the end. And I think that does reflect on who has the best chance to emerge from the pack, get those wild cards and those 6-7 seeds.
Well, you know who's 6-4? The Patriots.
There's
the Patriots, you know, and Mac Jones is, you know, just learning his craft, pardon the pun in New England, but learning his craft.
Yeah,
playing quarterback, and the Patriots are going to be there in the end, aren't they?
John, great, great point. You know, another team, offensive line, their O-line, I was shocked. They come out at the beginning of the season, their O-line wasn't playing very well. Then they got hurt, or some guys were out for COVID, and you have a rookie quarterback trying to learn at the same time. So it's kind of a mishmash mess. But now their O-line is starting to get healthy. That's what you saw against Cleveland. Their O-line is healthy for the first time in a while across the board, and they pushed the Browns around. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll tell you this. I was in Foxborough in August for Giants joint practices with the Patriots. And I came away from those couple of days thinking, my goodness, like, this team could challenge for the Super Bowl. Like, that's how I felt watching them, the disparity between what the Giants look like and what the Patriots look like. And you always have to kind of dial yourself down after a couple of days of practice. They might look horrible the next day and you're not there. But that was actually when Cam Newton was still around, but Mac was about to take the job. Of course, a rookie QB and a guy who is starting to come into his own. But still, of course, a rookie is going to make mistakes. So how far can he take them? I will say this, John, I would go as far as saying, you know, Bob mentioned how hot the Colts have been since the early season. You look at the Patriots, I think they've won 4 or 5, and you look at their schedule. I mean, they're going to win a lot more games. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what's going to happen with the Bills, if they're going to lay any more eggs, but I legitimately think, I thought this at the beginning of the year, I thought that the Patriots are going to win this division. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think that they could be that it could go down to the stretch into the wire of Patriots Bills if they keep continuing on this trajectory.
Do you realize what that would happen, would do to people in Western New York? That, you know, they finally think they have a better quarterback in Josh Allen, that Sean McDermott's done a great job as the coach, that things are going in the right direction. And then Bill Belichick drafts a kid.
I know.
And then they come back and haunt them one more time. Do you realize what you've just said?
I know. It's amazing. And you're hitting on something. I'm glad you're reminding me about this too, is this is something that I think we all talked about in the offseason when the Patriots spent all that money in free agency. I believe it was the most that Kraft has ever spent in one free agency by far. I think that the best storyline of this year coming in, it was Tom Brady won a Super Bowl without Bill. What's Bill going to do in response? We saw them spend all the money. We see them draft a quarterback. Now we're seeing them start to look like a really good team. I should mention Matt Judon on defense. I mean, he's been one of the best players in the league this season. But now we're looking at can you imagine if the Patriots get into the playoffs red hot? Like, you know, whatever Belichick says publicly, you know all he wants to do is raise that Lombardi and wink through the camera to Tom Brady. And I think it would be fascinating if they even got into the playoffs just to make a little bit of a run at it.
Well, you guys both know there was a constituency that said Belichick's greatness was tied completely to Brady, and Belichick wouldn't be considered a great coach, or some would say the greatest coach, if he didn't have Tom Brady as his quarterback. Well, guess what? He doesn't have Tom Brady now, and he's doing a pretty good job of convincing a lot of people, I would say. Yeah. We got like 1 minute, but I want some kind of an analysis of the Cowboys Chiefs, which is probably the game of the week. I'm not buying into the Cowboys yet. The Chiefs seem to have recovered from their early season woes. Who do you like in that one?
I like Dallas. I think that the Chiefs are – I don't think the Chiefs are fully recovered. I think the Raiders have gone in the tank a little bit with all the stuff they've been going through. That's why you saw that blowout. I mean, they lost the Giants as well. I think Dak Prescott is going to continue his MVP candidate season against the Chiefs defense that's played better – but has not faced a team with the weapons that Dallas has. I agree with you, Bob, that Dallas, you know, it's easy to look at them and say that they're a lot of flash and dash, but when the chips are all down on the table, what team are we going to see? But Mahomes' turnovers, I think Dallas has shown an ability to turn the football over. I think Trayvon Diggs and Dallas, they're going to have Patrick Mahomes' number in this game. I'm still not sure if Dallas is going to get it done when it counts in the playoffs, but I do think they are definitively a better team than the Chiefs.
I don't hate the Cowboys, but I don't like the Cowboys. I think the Chiefs are going to win this thing. The Dallas revival is going to come to a shocking conclusion before the Super Bowl hits. But then I could be 100% wrong. I have been before.
I'll tell you what, just to get, I know you need to wrap it up, but the Mahomes Chiefs win over the Raiders, that scares the whole league. But everyone can sit back and say, well, it was the Raiders, they're not playing well. If the Chiefs do to Dallas what you just said, there'll go shockwaves will go through the league because it'll tell everybody this is for real, they're back, and we all know what that means.
It is always our pleasure. We enjoy it so much. We look forward to the next time we have an opportunity to chat with you. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, John.
Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News will come back and wrap it after these messages. Well, I love chatting with Pat Leonard. We thank him very much for joining us from the New York Daily News.
We didn't even talk, you know, Pat admitted he's from Philadelphia. We didn't even get to talk about the Eagles.
Good.
Who seem to have turned things around. But your point, I tell you what, your point about the Colts, Bob, is a really, really good one. And it's
beware.
Indianapolis. It's Indianapolis Buffalo this weekend.
Yes, it is.
And all the Bills, of a sudden, the
Bills had a couple of really bad offensive weeks. And looked like they may have recovered last week, although you have to take the quality of the opposition into consideration.
Well, they lost to Jacksonville.
Well, I know. So, look out. The Colts are not going to be a pushover. I know the Bills have a better record, but
Well, it's 5-5 Indy versus 6-3 Buffalo.
That's right.
I would not be surprised to see the Colts. I think Frank Reich is one of the really, really quality coaches. He's a bit of a quarterback whisperer, right? I mean, he seems to be able
former
to
former quarterback of the Cleveland Browns
and the Toronto Argonauts, Bob. Did you know that?
I had forgotten that.
Yeah, yeah. And the Toronto Argonauts, not for very long, but he did play in the CFL.
Opinions on the Cowboys Chiefs? You didn't throw your 2 cents in?
I'm not sold on the Chiefs yet. It does go to me about what Patrick Mahomes is or isn't. Has he read too many press clippings? And does the league know what he does now? And that to me is the thing. I think the Cowboys win. So,
well, I don't like the Cowboys, as I said before.
Yeah.
So I acknowledge that bias, but I've seen this team be overrated year after year after year. And are they good? Yeah. Are they good enough? I'm not ready to say that yet. And this is a team that is the Chiefs that you cannot exclude from Super Bowl consideration. And if they play the way they're capable of playing, they beat the Dallas Cowboys.
And I think Pat's point is right. If they do it for a second week in a row, then people will pay attention.
Then look
if
out.
If Dallas wins, then Kansas City's an also-ran.
We got to get out of here. Again, our thanks to Pat Leonard for joining us. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Have yourselves a good one. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.